Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not used to this. I've been asked to speak on the book of Jonah, and I'll be dealing mostly with the historical aspect of the book of Jonah. Many modern scholars think that this is just a story or a fable, but that's not so, because this is a book which describes real places and people and events. And the style of the book and the wording is similar to the other books of history, like Kings and Chronicles. And the Jews also accepted Jonah as history. And there's a verse in 2 Kings 14:25. Jonah has been mentioned before the book of Jonah. You can see that's put up there. And the most significant factor is the Lord Jesus himself talked and taught that Jonah was real. That is when he was talking to the Pharisees. In Matthew chapter 12, verses 39 to 41, Jesus is talking to Pharisees and he answered them, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a miraculous sign, but none will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will stand up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and now one greater than Jonah is here," that is Jesus. So that kind of settles all arguments, because Jesus, he validates Jonah. This book was written somewhere around 770 to 750 BC, and in Hebrew it's called Yonah, and it means dove. The prophet Jonah was a contemporary of Amos and Hosea, and we've heard about Amos already from Chris and Nicole. And we know that even from the first verse in Jonah, and even that verse, that he was the son of Amittai, and he came from the village called Gath Hefer. And it's present day, it's an Arab village called El Meshed, which is actually only 3 miles from Nazareth. So he was actually a local hero in Nazareth. When Jesus was growing up, he would have been very familiar with Jonah, because he was a local hero there. And he came from Galilee, which is the northern kingdom. That again, there is a say in the New Testament, the Pharisees say that a prophet does not come out of Galilee, but Jonah is a prophet who came out of Galilee. And he came from the northern part, the northern kingdom. So if you're wondering what's the northern kingdom, during the time of King Saul, David, and Solomon, Israel was a whole nation. But during the time of Solomon's son Rehoboam, the kingdom was divided because they rebelled against Rehoboam. So the 10 tribes, they formed the northern kingdom, which is called Israel when you look in Chronicles and Kings. And the southern part is known as Judah. And so Jonah came from the northern kingdom. And the northern part is also known as, if you look in Isaiah chapter 9, it says Galilee of the nations. Why is it called Galilee of the Nations? Because it was more international compared to the southern part. The northern part was a crossroads of the world, because there's a road coming down from Europe along the coast going into Arabia. And there's a road coming up from Africa through Damascus into China and India. So there was a lot of trade and a lot of people moving in through the northern part, the northern kingdom. And that's where Jonah came from. Could you put up 2 Kings 18:2? No, 2 Kings. There's something not coming, I'm sorry. Sorry, just bear with me. It's not 18:2, it's 18:26. And so I just wanted to show that, because there was a lot of people coming in and out, that the people knew different languages. It says, this is when the... Oh, Yeah. That's when the Assyrian commanders, they come to speak to the Hebrew leaders during the time of King Hezekiah. And then you see that they say, please speak to your servants Aramaic. Since we understand it, don't speak to us in Hebrew in the hearing of the people on the wall. So Jonah would have known Aramaic, so it would not have been difficult for him to go into Nineveh and preach. So it's just like today, we think, oh, they wouldn't have known the language in that place, but they did know. There were people moving around and they knew each other's language. And would you put up the slide of the map of the Fertile Crescent? Yep. Now this is showing most of the Assyrian Empire. And it's basically between the river Tigris, the Euphrates, the Jordan, and the Nile. That's called as the Fertile Crescent. And it shows the different periods of the Assyrian Empire. At one point, they extended right down into Egypt. Now, who are the Assyrians? And if you look in the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10, we see that he was the second son of Shem. So the Assyrians are descended from Ashur. And we see further in the same chapter that he built Nineveh, and later on it was taken over by Nimrod. Nimrod is the one who built the Tower of Babel. And the Assyrian Empire lasted around 750 years. They started roughly around 1300 BC. And Jonah went into Assyria around 770 BC. And Nahum goes in 150 years later. And just so that we understand who and what Nineveh is, Nineveh finally disappears in 612 BC, but they were a nation that expanded with great cruelty. They would impale their enemies on wooden poles, skin their captives, chop off body parts. And it's, it's a similar kind of, you see the ISIS, what they did, they come from the same region. So, it's the ruling powers and principalities. And there were excavations done in Nineveh since 1841. Gotta put the picture of Nineveh excavations. And it is a big city. There were 1,500 towers guarding the city, each 200 feet high. And the city walls are so wide that three chariots could ride abreast. And the wall engravings show that people were tortured to death for amusement. This is the kind of people that lived in Nineveh. And put up the picture of Mosul now. And you would have heard the name Mosul during the time of when the ISIS was rampant in Iraq. And actually, Nineveh is, the ruins of Nineveh you'd find in Mosul. And so Mosul, this is before the ISIS. It was a flourishing city. And just off the, I would just like to say that the Assyrian people, they came to the Lord by about 3rd century, most of them were Christians. But they have suffered persecution throughout the centuries. And many of the Christians that you would have heard that who lay down their lives for the Lord with the ISIS would have been from an Assyrian background. And the Assyrians are the ones, they also, what they did was that they would exile the captives from the countries they've conquered, and they would be sent to a different part. So that's how the Samaritans came. We see that in 2 Kings 17:24. During the last king of Israel, Hosea, the Assyrian kings destroyed the northern kingdom and then deported all of them to Assyria. And other nations were brought in to settle in the land. That's how we have the Samaritans. Now, I think we'll get into the book of Jonah now. The theme of the book is God dealing with Jonah and with Assyria. It's a book about God and what he does, that he is sovereign over all creation. I hope you've all read the book. It's an action-packed book because there's a never dull moment in the book. There's always something happening. And the story of Jonah in a nutshell is God asks him to go to Nineveh, like Steph tells us, upwards and outwards. And he refuses, he takes a ship and goes in the opposite direction to Tarshish. And he goes from the port of Joppa. And then what happens, a storm arises, and then they throw him overboard from the ship, the sea calms down, a great fish swallows him. After 3 days and 3 nights, he's vomited out onto dry land. He goes to Nineveh and preaches, the city repents and is not destroyed. And Jonah gets angry at the Lord's compassion. Can you put up the picture of the port, Jaffa? Joppa is present day, it's the city of Jaffa in Israel. And you can put up the other one on the picture of Jonah. So that gives you an idea of where Jonah was and where he was supposed to go in Nineveh, and he went in the opposite direction. Many a time we feel like that, isn't it? When God tells us something, we want to do the opposite. But we see that God is in control, and it's better to listen to God, you know, rather than being in the belly of the fish. And in this book, as you would have read, there are, I would like to point out there are 10 miracles in this book. Jonah chapter 1, verse 4. And the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. So that's a great storm which the Lord sent. And same chapter, verse 7, you see, the sailors said to each other, come, let us cast lots to find out who's responsible for this calamity. They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. In verse 15, then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. See, the sea calms down. Verse 17, but the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. That's a great fish which God provided. And then in chapter 2, we see that Jonah was inside the fish and he prayed to the Lord. Like before I prepared for this teaching, I would always think that Jonah was in the fish. The fish swallowed Jonah and he was alive in the fish. But reading it and in different, you know, versions and looking at it more closely, I'm not sure whether Jonah was alive in the belly of fish, whether he drowned and was he dead in the belly of the fish, and it was a spirit praying, and then he was resurrected. Just have a read and see, you know, what the Lord speaks to you. I'm not sure whether he was alive or was he dead and resurrected. Either way, it's still a miracle. Then in verse 10, we see, and the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. That is the sixth miracle there. And the greatest miracle in this is that Nineveh repents at Jonah's preaching. It's 100% results. Right from the common man up to the king, everyone repents. Not even Billy Graham had such results. But the sad thing was that Jonah wasn't happy about it. Why wasn't he happy? And it's amazing that, you know, he didn't have Facebook or WhatsApp or TV, radio, no finances, just one man with bleached skin. Because if he spent time in 3 days in the belly of the fish, there have been reports of another man who was found somewhere off the Falkland Islands who was in the belly of a fish, and when he was rescued after 2 days, his skin was bleached. Imagine Jonah going into Nineveh, he is a foreigner coming there and with a bleached skin. They'd all ask, what happened to you? And that itself would have kind of, when he tells his story, that is the sign of Jonah, you know? It would have, and God, definitely God was at work, and that's why the people repented, the city repented. And what we see here is that, see, when he said that, chapter 4 to 10, I will read from chapter 3. On the first day Jonah started into the city, he proclaimed, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned. The Ninevites believed God. They declared a fast, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. And when the news reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. And then he issued a proclamation in Nineveh, by the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let any man or beast, herd or flock, taste anything. Do not them eat or drink, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. I was just thinking that, you know, if someone went to preach, you know, maybe Step goes to preach in London, and this happens, you know, with all the turmoil going there, how we would see, you know, in our own nation here in Belfast. But it starts with a common man, It works from down up. And when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion, and he did not bring upon them the destruction he had threatened. And then we see in chapter 4, verse 6, we see And the Lord God provided a vine and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head, to ease his discomfort, and Jonah was very happy about it. How the gourd or the vine, it grew up so quickly. That was again God, an action there. Verse 7, but at dawn the next day, God provided a worm which chewed the vine so that it withered. God spoke to the worm. He still does. He can speak to the worm. He can speak to the seed. And then the last one is verse 8. When the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind, and the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. We see that God is sovereign over all creation, and just not man, beast, the weather. He is in control. And sometimes it's easy for us to think, looking around the world, God, where are you? He's still in control. And in this book, we see that God deals with Jonah as well as Assyria. Jonah represents Israel, and Assyria is the Gentile. We see the father heart of God, his plan of salvation for both Jew and Gentile. It wasn't just for the Jew, but for the Gentile as well. The gospel is for all peoples, irrespective of race, religion, or nationality. And here we see that when the people of Nineveh repent, God forgives and he relents. He does not send the calamity on them. Jonah was waiting to see how God is going to punish them. And that's why, he was just, he went up and he sat waiting to see what's going to happen. But he is a God of the second chance. I know that for myself, maybe a third chance or a fourth chance, many chances. He is a forgiving God. It's like we who are parents know many a time when our children, they do something, but then we are always there waiting for them to come back to us with open heart. And how much more our Father in heaven? Because Jesus, why did he come? He came to show us the Father. And there are many reasons why Jonah initially did not want to go to Nineveh. Some say that's because he feared the Assyrians, but I don't think that's so. Again, the Assyrians were a wicked people, so perhaps he thought they needed to be punished. Again, there's another reason that he was thinking about his own country, Israel, because he knew that they would be used as a tool of judgment against his own nation. Because when we listen to Amos, we know that how the northern kingdom, they were very wealthy, but they had turned away from God. There was idolatry and injustice and a lot of things going on. They had turned away from God. Just want to read chapter 4, verse 2 from Jonah. Why was Jonah angry? He prayed to the Lord, because he said Jonah was, in the first verse it says, Jonah was greatly displeased and became angry. He prayed to the Lord. Oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. So we see why did not Jonah want to go, because he knew the heart of God. Jonah was a man who loved God too much, and he could not bear to see people abuse God's grace. Human nature abuses the mercy of God and uses it as a blank check for sins. We see that many a time God gives us so many chances, and we think, okay, yes, and then we forget about it and we carry on as before. Jonah was right in his understanding of human nature, but he was wrong in his understanding of God's nature. Jonah was wrong in refusing to go, saying he knew what was best. Many a time, we try to justify things and situations saying, oh, no, I don't think so. I think it's better to just obey God. And God had to give Jonah an object lesson with the plant, with the vine there. Because when the plant dies off after the worm eats it, and God tells Jonah in verse 9 of chapter 4, but God said to Jonah, a right to be angry about the vine. Because he did not, you know, make the plant grow, and he didn't tend it, but he was angry when the plant withered and died. God is our Father. And he has so much mercy, and he has so much pity for the people. Many a time we think, Lord, you know, it's why don't you judge the people? But it's because of his mercy. Because of his mercy, because he wants all men to be saved. All men to be saved. And God has so much mercy and pity on Nineveh because there were 120,000, you know, children there, because it talks about 120,000 who did not know their right hand from their left. That would refer to children who were not, reached morally old enough age, you know, maybe less than 12 perhaps. So God had compassion on the children. He had compassion on the cattle. And what we see that many a time, we don't have the patience of God. Because, you know, sometimes you walk with people, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15, and then you're like, that's it. You know, but God isn't like that. You know, he sees the end from the beginning. Just, you know, 2-3 weeks back when I think Andrew was leading worship, there was a song which, you know, had this verse, mercy triumphs over judgment. And that's the heart of God. He's so patient, so full of mercy, and he gives wicked people every chance he can. Let God have the last word. But we can go to the opposite extreme and say God will never be angry and God will never punish. And that's where Prophet Nahum comes in next week.